it's right for any church leader to say, we need more churches wherever we are.
Absolutely.
So you take somewhere like Leicester. I mean, Leicester, I think south of Leicester especially, feels fairly well served by evangelical churches. But if 10% of Leicester were to be in church on a Sunday morning, that would be 20,000 people in church.
Yeah.
That would be 20 churches of 1,000 people. And when you express it like that, you think, even in places which seem fairly well served, we need more churches. Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIC podcast for church leaders. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Adrian Reynolds. I'm one of the two associate national directors for the FIEC, and I'm joined by the other one.
That's me.
Hello, Graham.
Your partner.
Partner in crime. I don't know. Partner in whatever. Yep. Partner in gospel work, Graham Bynan. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be together.
We're here to talk about church planting. And this is the beginning of a little series we're doing, isn't it? How what sort of form is that series going to take? Just talk us through that.
Yeah, we've got an introduction today, thinking about church planting in general, some of the different models of planting. And then we're going to follow that up with three examples and stories of particular plants of each of those models.
Right. Now, I am a leader in an FIEC church. It was a plant, but not in my time. I guess almost 15 years ago now. I've never been in a church plant. I don't particularly think I'm wired that way. Why is this a topic for me? Why do I need to be listening? And I guess the people will be listening and they'll be thinking, I don't own a check shirt. I haven't got a big watch. I haven't got a beard. All the prerequisites, I think, in my caricatured life for church planters. What size watch have you got?
I don't know. You're not wearing a watch today.
I'm sure you have a big chunky watch somewhere. So why is this a series and an episode on church planting an episode for every FIEC leader?
Well, inevitably, let's say, those thinking of planting will be more interested to listen. But we should all be concerned and interested in planting because, frankly, we just need more churches in this country.
Is that true everywhere?
Absolutely. I mean, a church could fill a street. A street could fill a church.
Okay, yes. Well, if it was a mega church, it could fill a street, perhaps in a large campus. But I know what you mean. Yes, okay.
Even if we're thinking about a small percentage of an area, we need more churches reaching localities.
Right.
And that's obviously more true in some areas that are particularly poorly served by churches, but it's true to some degree of all of the country. And so we should all be concerned for there being more churches around the UK.
So it's not threatening. It's right for any church leader to say, we need more churches wherever we are.
Absolutely.
So you take somewhere like Leicester. I mean, Leicester, I think south of Leicester especially, feels fairly well served by evangelical churches. But if 10% of Leicester were to be in church on a Sunday morning, that would be 20,000 people in church.
Yeah.
That would be 20 churches of 1,000 people. And when you express it like that, you think, even in places which seem fairly well served, we need more churches.
Yeah, we need far more churches. And it may be that you're in a church and you simply ought to be interested in the cause of Christ and the country and supporting planting from afar, as it were.
So if I am in Market Harbour, I should be interested in what happens in Newcastle.
Of course, of course. Yeah. I also hope there actually be real encouragements in it. And of course, any one church might then at some point think about planting.
Right.
So lots of reasons to be listening.
And we know, don't we, from things that have happened in the FIC, it doesn't need to be geographic proximity. The Lord places different locations and peoples in your heart, doesn't he? And you come into contact with them. You know, the place I grew up in, Southend, very, very poorly served. It's a large city, very poorly served by churches now because of historical things that have happened in the Baptist Union. Desperate, desperate need of churches.
Yeah.
And sometimes these places are just deeply ingrained in our psyches, aren't they?
They are, or there are other links between churches and places in the country.
For example,
we've had some churches supporting plants elsewhere in the country, maybe because a key person has gone from that church elsewhere. So it's not down the road; it's not a plant down the road.
But there's a relational connection.
There's a relational connection, and churches have partnered together in a wonderful way in prayer and finance and other support. Maybe sent teams to help with a holiday club or something like that. Yep. Meaningful partnership. And so in one sense, we can say all churches in the FIEC are involved in planting, because that's part of what the FIEC does, and being a member of it helps that. In other cases, it's a more tangible, concrete
part. It's worth saying, isn't it? I mean, years and years ago, FIEC itself did plant churches.
Yeah.
We don't do that now, do we? We're not talking about FIEC central team directing and planting churches.
No, we don't do that. The FIEC is its churches, and it's our churches that plant. We may help initiate. What we particularly want to do is stimulate planting, hence things like this podcast, helping churches think about what that could look like. And we want to support planters, which we do with things like one-to-one coaching, training cohorts, and other things.
So whoever you are, don't turn off.
Yeah.
Actually, this is a podcast for you. It's a podcast for me, isn't it?
Yeah,
very much. I am in a reasonably established church in a reasonably established area, but I'm already thinking, oh yes, that town just down the road, that doesn't really have a church.
Yeah.
Or that area of another city nearby doesn't have enough churches. So yeah. I'm already in that kind of mode.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the other caricature is need to knock on the head is nothing's happening at the moment. It's all gone a bit quiet post-COVID. Nothing really has kicked back into life. That's simply not true, is it? FIEC churches are planting.
They are.
Tell us what's happening.
Well, they have been for a long time, a great history of planting in the FIEC. It is true, of course, that COVID did have an effect, although some churches I know of did launch during COVID, amazingly.
Really?
Yeah. At least one I know of launched online, having had plans to launch, in person. There has been something to pick up, though. In 2025 so far, we've seen 13 new plants or replants.
Okay. And we're we ought to say we're recording this mid-November. So we've still got a bit of time to go.
We have.
I'm not sure church is going to be planted in Christmas.
I don't know of any starting in December. I do know of some starting in January.
Maybe it's the best time to start, with a Christmas service. Go in with a bang.
Yeah. So we're currently seeing a little over one a month in terms of a new church. I know of 9 new plants or revitalizations slated for 26 so far.
Okay.
So I think given we're a network of over 670 churches, that's not extraordinary. You'd want that kind of thing. But I think it is a good sign of health that we're seeing that kind of number.
So over 5 years, that might mean 60 churches.
Yeah. Absolutely.
For example, almost 10% of the number of churches in the FIEC. And I think you're right. It doesn't feel like that's super miraculous.
Yeah.
Although, of course, every church plant is a miracle.
Yeah.
We understand that. But you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like, whoa, this is a sort of revival of church planting. Yeah. And yet it does feel like it's in a healthy place.
That's right.
Yeah. And presumably those churches that are thinking of planting all at different stages.
Yeah.
Some almost ready to go. Initial stages. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Now, let me just deal with some more caricatures. Forgive my facetiousness earlier, but I do think of church planters as the guys with beards and check shirts and big watches. And if you're watching, you'll realise that Graham is an experienced church planter. Let the listener understand. But we do tend to have this caricature, both of a church planter and a church plant.
Yeah.
And I think for those of us who have never done church planting or have not sort of swum in those waters particularly, perhaps there is a kind of a narrow understanding of what we mean either by a church planter or a church plant. And the answer is there are lots of different kinds of planters and lots of different kinds of plants, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So just on planters, first of all, we'll focus on plants in a minute, but on planters, there are many and varied people who lead church plants. There is no one personality type, certainly. And in fact, even a mix of gift sets. I mean, I would describe myself as a pastor who happens to have led church plants
rather than
a church planter specifically. I do think there's
Are those two
more
different individuals?
Personally, I don't think so, because I think any church planter needs to be a pastor.
Can any church pastor be a church planter?
Well, I was going to say, I think probably, but I think the area, the skill set that gets stretched the most is in leadership.
Right.
Now, I think any pastor needs to be able to lead.
Of course.
But it can be slightly different leading an established setup. You know, the ship is built, the ship is sailing, and you're making course adjustments is slightly different to deciding what sort of ship you're going to build. There are just more questions. There's more openness. And some people are probably better suited to that kind of openness and the leadership needed within it than others are. But it's always degrees of. It's not, are you this or are you that?
Okay, they're not separate gifts.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And of course, we want to see churches planted, not just people reached.
Yeah.
And therefore, you would expect there to be some overlap.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in being a church planter, you're saying you may well be a gifted evangelist, but you are more than an evangelist because you pastor people, not just reach people with the gospel.
And actually, the people you do see planting churches who are basically just evangelists, I don't mean to disparage that gifting, but are very gifted in just reaching out and sharing the gospel with people who are not yet Christians. You often don't see church plants developing with a depth and a connection.
That's right.
There need to be more people as part of that team. Yeah. We'll come on to that in just a moment.
And I'd love there to be more gifted evangelists.
Absolutely.
And I'd love more evangelists to be part of church plants.
Yeah.
But you need more than just evangelism.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the different types of church plant then, because there isn't a one size fits all.
No.
Which is encouraging, really, because places are different, people are different, contexts are different.
Yeah.
I came to Market Harbour from the East End of London. You almost couldn't find two different, more different places, rural, semi-rural market town from, one of the most densely populated parts of the country. So there are different kinds of church plant. Just to outline for us some of those, we're going to be thinking about them over the course of this series, but what might some of the different church plants be?
Yeah, look, people break them down into different kind of categories. I use three main categories just to keep it simple.
Do they all begin with the same letter?
Probably not, actually.
Okay.
No, sorry about that.
That's right. That appeals to my sense of chaos. I like that. Yeah.
So three for the sake of simplicity, but there are then variations within them. So the first is a classic mother-daughter plant. You have a larger church a mother church, and a group go from it to form a plant.
Okay. Why might they do that?
Because they want to reach a new area,
okay.
Maybe a particular geographic area in a state or a particular group of people. Maybe sometimes it's prompted by the mother church being full.
Right.
And they simply want to grow, and they want to see greater growth of the kingdom and the church in that area.
Let me just, a little aside, a little bypath meadow. We don't mind a bypath meadow on the podcast. Church is getting full. It seems that the default option these days is double up the service. Thoughts on that? You could be planting. Go on, say what you think.
Say what I think. Well, it does depend a little bit on our ecclesiology.
Okay.
And two services is often the easiest way to go, and I understand it and appreciate the reasons for it. My concern is what happens long term, because what you can end up with down the line is effectively two churches.
Okay, you have to work really hard at combating that, don't
you? Well, personally, I think you have to work so hard at combating it, it's actually not worth it.
Okay.
Because you are fighting a tide. You'll have two groups of people who basically don't know each other, who are united by the leadership and the building they meet in. Now, that's a worst-case scenario. It does depend how it's set up.
Of course, of course.
But that's the way it will tend to go. And if a church is happy with that and wants to grow that way, we'll have multiple services on one site. But the more you go down that route, the more I think it's wise to have separate leadership for those different congregations.
At which point you are planting.
At which point you're talking about what is an on-site plant.
Yes. Yeah.
The trouble is that can be quite confusing to people, because they might think, oh, I'm late this morning, so I'll go to the later service. But that's a different church with different leadership. They're not your leaders. And planting off-site down the road makes that clearer to everybody and usually increases geographical reach.
Okay. So there could be good reasons for doing it, are good reasons that churches do that.
Of course.
And it might be a stepping stone, actually, onto moving somewhere else. And that congregation essentially gets established before moving somewhere else. So, how many of these 13 church plants then in this last year have been that kind of relationship? I'm putting you on the spot now.
You know this. You are, and I'm afraid I can't give you exact figures.
Okay. I would
guess about 2/3.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And is that the easiest kind of church plant?
It usually is. It does depend on the setup, but usually you may well have leadership from within that church. And a kind of core group of people going from that church.
A culture.
And a certain culture. I mean, it does depend. I don't want to assume that the plant is just a replica of the mothership.
No,
because it might change in certain ways. Mm. And that's certainly.
But you have got a starting point. You can flex from it.
You've got a common starting point. Probably, hopefully, good relationships with each other and so on. So a subset of that church moves however far down the road and starts something new. Mm. That's usually the easiest type of plant.
Okay. Yeah. What are some of the providential signs we should be looking to God to see that might indicate that's the way to go?
I think very often
you talked about being full. Yeah, I mean, that full, might be one
full,
of them.
Full would be one of them. And in my experience, that was a prompter for two plants I've led.
Okay.
But also, you might have a suitable person to lead it. Okay. You might bring that person in, but there might be somebody there who would be very good for that. You may also have people in a locality saying, wouldn't it be great to have a church here?
So 25 people who all live in the same area.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
exactly.
So it's that kind of thing. Exactly. So that's mother-daughter, number one.
Yeah, number one. Number two, parachute plant.
Okay.
Mother-daughter plants, by their very nature...
Sounds like the commandos. It does a little bit.
I can't think of a better term for it, but it's often called that. As compared to mother-daughter, where you move a group down the road... I mean, some of them may not even have, you know, a lot of them may have to even have to move house because they're moving, as it were, more local to where they live.
Yeah, yeah.
A parachute plant is to go somewhere else in the country, somewhere where there is nothing. And if we only ever have mother-daughter plants, our reach will always be quite limited. So what about landing in a brand new place where there is no decent mother church to plant from? That would be a parachute plant.
Why might some of the, what might some of the reasons be why there isn't a decent church, sort of a mother-daughter?
Yeah. Many and varied.
I'm just thinking some of the things we might be on the lookout for.
Yeah.
Housing estates?
There certainly could be new housing estates. That would often be on the edge of existing towns, a mother-daughter might exist in moving further out. With parachute plants, you're thinking more, you mentioned South End. It may well be.
So let me tell you South End story then. So I grew up in South End, proud to be an Essex boy. Along with a couple of other people in the FIC. Come on, Essex. And we grew up, the Baptist Union was extraordinarily strong.
Yeah.
So South End, which is a city now, 350,000 people, 400,000, that's, it depends how you count, and that sort of size. There were 14 strong Baptist Union churches, all with congregations of in the hundreds. And growing up was great. Loved it. Big kids work, you know, exciting services, all the rest of it. I don't want to be too disparaging on any individual church, but they've basically gone liberal together.
Yeah.
And because they were so strong, they sucked the life out of other denominations. So there were little tiny churches here and there that were holding firm to the gospel. But basically, the other denominations that you would have expected to have large evangelical representations got sucked dry by these strong Baptist Union churches. And as they have declined, let's say, together... it's meant that South End is really left without really many, if any, viable gospel contemporary churches. Yeah. HTB have just done a very successful plant.
Yeah.
It's interesting how people have flocked to that.
Yes.
There's a Little Grace Baptist Church, but for the size of the place, desperately served.
Yeah.
And where my parents live, probably the nearest FIC church or something that's of that ilk would be Danbury Mission.
Yeah.
But it would take my parents, my parents aren't Christians, it would take them almost an hour and a half to drive there on Sunday.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, places...
There are places like that.
There's a kind of historical vagaries that things happen.
And it basically falls into two categories. One is what you've described of churches going liberal.
Yeah.
And the other is where the faithful churches are being faithful, but possibly... very traditional, growing older, smaller, and they themselves are then in need of new life. They are not a vibrant, growing church that could plant themselves.
Which brings us on to the third category, doesn't it?
That's right.
Notice
that's
what we did there? That's very neat, isn't it?
Very neat.
It's almost like we practiced.
So the third category is a little bit different, a replant or a revitalization.
Okay.
Where you have a pre-existing church, but... for whatever historical reasons, it is often smaller. It's not growing. It's often more elderly in congregation and so on. And it needs a new lease of life. And that can be done in different ways. I mean, at the very least, it might be a new leader who could give it new direction. Sometimes a new leader, maybe with a few new key people to add a bit sort of a catalyst in it.
Yeah.
But very often a new leader with a group of people.
Okay.
And so it's like the mother-daughter plant, but into a pre-existing church. And so there are obviously different dynamics there in terms of the relationship between the pre-existing group and the new group, and the pre-existing group wanting effectively this new direction, new leadership, new people to be there, and they have to welcome that.
Right. And presumably all variations of those three and, you know, in-betweens and all the rest of it. Have you described them there in descending order of difficulty or ascending order of difficulty, or is it more complicated than
it is,
that?
It is more complicated. It does depend on this, on the context. A mother-daughter plant, by and large, would be the easiest for reasons we've mentioned, but it might be planting into a really difficult context, which could make it hard.
Yeah.
A parachute plant, the hardest thing is usually recruiting a core group to go, because everyone has to move to Southend or wherever. That's a really big deal.
Well, hang on. that could be taken the wrong way. Southend by the sea, I just like to say. Yeah.
And so it's usually the gathering of the core groups is the hardest there.
Right.
On the replant or the revitalization, the hardest thing is usually is effectively negotiating the relationship.
Mm. Yeah.
And a group saying, we want new leadership and we want new direction, but having to give up some of their kind of precious ways of working and their church effectively kind of being renewed around them, they can both rejoice in it and find it quite hard.
So there's cost in each of them.
Yeah.
The cost may fall on different people.
That's right.
And in different ways. That one of the great stories in the FIC is a revitalization in Cranford done by Robin Asker a few years ago now with FIC churches and some other churches in West London. And the church had declined really just to a handful of old ladies who said, we don't mind the services being in a different language because we're trying to reach people around us who are 95% from South Asia.
Yeah.
And they appointed Robin, who's from Pakistan and speaks a lot of the local languages. And indeed, services are in a different language now. And you think, actually, that just to me just reminded me, actually, there's a huge cost for the existing church of accepting a kind of a replant in or a revitalization.
Yeah. There'll be costs in different ways. In mother-daughter plants, the cost is usually relational.
Yeah.
You know, good friends leave. When we planted from our plant, one small group was kind of decimated.
Yeah.
You know, just because of people going from it. Yeah. In the parachute plant, it's usually the cost of people relocating across the country and so on. There are costs of different sorts and different ways. And frankly, it'd be much easier if we were all very comfortable and stayed where we were.
Yeah, so then in gospel terms, it's not cost-free to stay where you are.
It's not. And what we want to see is sacrifice for the cause of Christ
across the country. So they're all different, but there are some common ingredients, aren't there?
There are.
What are some of those common ingredients as we begin to think about either being a church plant ourselves or a church planting church, or indeed getting behind the work of church planting? What are some of those common ingredients?
Yeah, look, we'll explore these for each story we tell later, but I've got three ingredients: vision, leadership, and core group.
Right.
So any church needs leadership of some kind.
Yep.
And any plant needs leadership. Who's in charge of this thing? Where are we going? Mm-hmm. And then there's a vision for the church: where it is, what it is, how will it operate? And there's lots we could take for granted there. But every different churches have different feels and ethos and philosophy and way of working, formal, informal, and so on. Things that are important to them. And the leader, of course, will be key to what that vision is.
Yeah.
Because when I led plants from some churches, who I am and my philosophy has shaped what that church would be, along with my other leaders. And then the core group, who's coming? Who's forming this embryonic church? And they need to buy into that vision themselves.
Is that explicitly true? Is there a very close connection between people buying into the vision and being a successful member? I mean, if you were kind of 50% sold out on it, is it just becomes too difficult then?
No, I think it varies. And some people buy in different ways. Some people love a new project and just come along anyway.
Yep. Love a bit of change.
So you get people buying at different levels. The reason I say they need to buy into the vision is one of the things you must avoid in planting is people feeling like they've been misled. I was invited on this plant and it wasn't what you told me it would be.
Right.
And there can be some really key things there in terms of what the vision and how it's going to work. One plant I led, we were planting from a church that had what's called closed membership. You had to be baptized as a believer to be a member. Other people were coming from other backgrounds and they wanted to know what our membership policy was. And it was, you know, clarity was kindness here. Mm. If I was going to have closed membership, I should tell them quickly and they shouldn't bother. If I'm not, I can tell them that. Mm. So there'll be key things that you don't want to mislead people.
And I guess the challenge there is, you know, I'm collecting together a core group. I basically want as many people as possible, don't I?
So, absolutely.
So actually, you know, just stay off the difficult things.
Yeah.
Stay off the fact that we're this or we're that.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Just get
that's
as many right. people as possible.
And any planter...
That's not going to end happening.
No. And me as a young planter, any warm body was welcome as far as I was concerned.
Especially if they could play the piano or...
Do know, anything
do
in
IT or... Yes,
exactly, yeah. exactly. And you have to learn to be... While that's a good instinct in a sense, you have to be more discerning and say, here's what we're about as a church. Is that for you? Is that inviting to you? Do you want to be part of that?
Yeah.
Much better to have a smaller but unified core group that buys into that vision, that knows and trusts that leadership, than something larger but more disparate.
Yeah. Interestingly to me, you're basically describing a healthy church.
Well, this is the thing.
You know, vision, leadership, and a core team, people who are really committed to what's going on and want to get stuck in.
Yeah, yeah.
This is about a healthy church planting a healthy church.
Yeah, exactly. And I think those the difference with the plant is those three things are all up for grabs.
Yeah.
And so you're building those. Those, I think, are core things in normal church life, and you could use that kind of triangle of things as a diagnostic for any one church. Mm. How clear is our vision? Do our leaders all own that vision? And so on. But you're talking about a pre-existing setup rather than something you're building. The work of church planting in any one of those three models is building those three areas so that they're joined up.
None of that feels speedy. You know, it feels like those things can take time to develop, to work through. Can't church plant next week? Is that fair? Or?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend church planting next week.
No.
But...
I'm busy next Sunday. Yeah. So
and it can take time, and that's right, because we're talking about something really significant.
Yeah, yeah.
And in many instances, we're talking about people making significant sacrifices to be part of it. So they need to know this leadership and trust them, and the leaders need to work out how they're going to do things together and so on. So a lot of conversation to be had. It does depend on your starting point. It depends where you're all coming from and how far apart or united you are, sort of phase one. And in some instances, it can happen much more quickly than others. In the replant scenario, there's often a much longer discussion time.
Of course.
Because of that need to work through issues with the pre-existing church and what they're happy before they have a feeling of effectively being taken over.
Yeah.
And then they could end up feeling like they'd been misled.
Tell us a little bit more about your experience, Graham. So you talked a little bit earlier, just very briefly, about one church plant. That's not the only church plant you've been involved in, though. So church plants that you've been involved in, different kinds?
Yeah, primarily mother-daughter. So in Leicester, a straight mother-daughter sort of plant, a church that was full.
So it was out of Knighton.
Out of Knighton, Free Church, planting Avenue Community Church, a few miles away, slightly different locality, different group of people.
Our producer, Joel, who's off camera, off microphone, is an elder at that
He's an
church.
Elder, and it's a delight.
And it's just lovely, isn't it, to see that? I mean, how long ago was that?
That was 20 years ago.
So it's lovely to see that coming around, an established church in that area. Yeah. So that was it. So Knighton to Avenue,
And then planted in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And that, again, was a mother-daughter plant, but a bit more complicated. It was a plant from Eden Baptist, planting into the north of Cambridge, what became Grace Church. But what made it different was there was, I won't bore you with the history, the history of churches in Cambridge, where a group of people living in that area were going to a different church that I had been at previously. And so the core group came from two different churches. So while it was kind of mother-daughter, we had two people coming into the core group from two sources who didn't necessarily know each other. So that provided a difference. And then we planted from Grace Church, and that was effectively a parachute, a kind of, this is where the models can blur. We planted in a new build town, North Stow, about 9 miles outside Cambridge. We had nobody living there. So everybody had to move house.
Every single person.
Every person had to move house to if they're going to live in that area. And so we didn't think we'd actually have very many who would be able to do that. So we had a dozen adults, including our leader and his family, to kick off with. We networked with other churches, and we had people coming from four other churches. So now we've got five churches contributing people.
Wow.
Which made a core group.
It's more like cousins rather than mother daughter.
Yeah, which made a core group of 30 adults, which was a great core group. But that, again, was a very different thing to oversee. Josh Montero was leading it, but I was sort of helping advise and so on. And so it was, it had some elements of mother-daughter because he was coming out of Grace Church with some of our people, but it also had this parachute feel of trying to bring together a diverse group who didn't know each other to plant in this new area. That plant, by the way, in a new build town with lots of new people coming into it, is now larger than Grace Church,
isn't it came from. Isn't that just an extraordinary grace of God?
Yeah.
And both of those actually, we call him the mother-daughter, but actually technically daughter-granddaughter.
Yes, that's right.
Knighton was planted, wasn't it? And so was your church, and then planting out into North Stowe.
That's right.
And isn't that, I think that's exciting to look over. Yeah. You know, people say we should always be looking forward, not looking back. But actually looking back just gives us a sense of excitement of what the Lord's done over a number of years, really.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 13 churches this year being planted. But actually, if we were to go back into the record books, we can see that within nonconformity, there's a great history of church planting and moving out into the suburbs and
fantastic
all this
history,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's and to go back to Avenue in Leicester, subsequent to my being there, they've planted.
Indeed.
Okay. In Ayres Monsall. Yeah. Yeah. So it's wonderful to see that.
Graham, thanks so much for joining us. I'm energised to find out more about church planting and just the part I can play in it. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be a church planter next door. I think that seems highly unlikely because of where the Lord has placed me at the moment. But I'm excited about thinking, you know, what part can I play in this? So thank you for introducing me to that and to everyone else. And if you've enjoyed the episode, please do join us for the next episode where we're going to be exploring a little bit more about one particular type of church plant. Thanks, Graham.
Thank you.